Have in today a very special guest, Philip St. John.
Hello.
Philip, great to have you in. Thanks for coming in again.
Great to have me.
Philip, tell us about yourself. Where are you from? What are you doing? Why are you writing?
Well, I live in Bray now, but I'm originally from Dunleary. Why did I start writing? I suppose because I liked reading. I think a lot of people who are creative get into it in their childhood, and it's often related to a childhood illness. And I had
really,
yeah, you find that quite a lot if you look at
you're stuck in the bed for a month,
and you can't do anything. So basically, it's like it strengthens the muscles in your imagination, if nothing else. So I had a club foot, so I was for a couple of summers I was laid up, you know, around the age of 10 or 11, and okay, I just read all the time. So I think that's where it came from. I thought, well, this is good.
What kind of... Did you have a favourite author? Was there a particular genre you were getting through?
It was trash. You know, it was like... It was Enid Blyton and the Beano and the Victor and stuff like that. Well, I mean, stuff that people say is trash, but I think whatever children want to read is fine. Whatever anybody wants to read is fine, as long as they're reading.
And in terms of... I mean, that was... If you take that as a kind of a starting point... Yeah. Did you have any kind of strong influence in teenage years? Did you get into more serious literature, or even a teacher who probably pushed you towards reading or writing?
Yeah. Well, I think actually a lot of the literature that I was into, if you want to call it that, in my teenage years would have been rock music more than anything and poetry. You know, Bob Dylan and people like that. At school... I had a teacher called Jim McNeef who used to get me to read out essays in fifth year or whatever.
Your own essays?
Yeah. So it was kind of the first time I had a sense that I actually might be good. I mean, I was doing it because I enjoyed doing it and he seemed to like it. So I suppose that kind of encouraged me. My reading was, again, very mixed. I mean, I was reading trash airport novels, you know, from airport novels to Dostoevsky and...
Whatever. Oh, that's all. A nice healthy mix.
Yeah. So then I went to UCD and I studied English and geography. And again, there was a bit of a mixture of stuff. But I suppose, are you asking about writers that were had an impact on me? I suppose the Joyce of Dubliners in particular.
Okay, yeah.
I like abrasive writing, you know, that's confrontational, that's kind of comes from an outsider's point of view. And I feel that's the Joyce that I like, the Joyce that's closer to satire and, you know, is, you know, he's sympathetic to the characters in Dubliners, but it's also quite a cool book, and I like that too about it.
How do you mean cool?
Well, you know, he tends to stand back from characters. He doesn't from Gabriel, obviously, at the end and the last one in The Dead. But in the others, he kind of watches them rather than getting you really inside them. Or if you are inside them, you're also outside them. And, you know, he sees them as part of a larger picture, the society of the time. I mean, it's just an amazing book, what it seems to capture. I mean, I don't know how true it is historically. I presume it is because he was very exact about the details he put down.
Yeah, there's plenty of anecdotes.
But it's just wonderful as a book. I much prefer it to Ulysses. I mean, I struggle with Ulysses, I have to admit. I seem to be the only person in Dublin who hasn't read it three times. I haven't read it once.
Maybe we should start a support group.
Good. So Joyce was a big influence. Then Dostoevsky had a big influence because, you know, he combined that thriller element in Crime and Punishment, you know, which I loved. And I did like, at that point too, I liked Graham Greene, though, since... You know, a complete aversion to him because all the, you know, the religious stuff really kind of I find a bit oppressive. But a really atmospheric writer used kind of filmic techniques, and I like that. You know, having grown up on TV, basically, you know, that would have been my culture, TV and music.
It's very interesting.
So I like that. Then I Raymond Carver had a big influence on me.
He was strictly short stories.
Short stories,
he?
Very short sometimes. Yeah. But I liked his kind of a pared down style.
Wasn't that his quote, pair and pair some more? Yeah.
Well, he had this thing where he said, you know, when he was talking about revising your work, that he goes over, or he went over his work and over it, taking out commas and full stops until he found out he was putting back the commas and full stops in the same place, and then he knew it was right. You know, he got down to that level of accuracy or control or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, he was just very exact, because it is with a short story, you're...
surgical.
Yeah, maybe a bit. But I liked the world he dealt with, you know, the anti-heroic view, the comedy, the black comedy. I loved
it. It was very kind of Beat Generation or something. It almost reminded me of Bukowski or something.
Yeah.
That is real kind of deadbeat kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they were kind of deadbeats, but they were deadbeats living in suburbia. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. They had a foot in the American dream, but the American dream wasn't letting me in the door kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Beats maybe kind of rejected the American dream, whereas Carver seemed to be people who still believe that the good life is ahead and society is fine.
Take your point, yeah.
He had an influence. Richard Ford as well.
Of course, yeah. He was in Dublin recently, I think.
That's right. He was actually working in Trinity when I was there. I think before you went to Trinity. he was teaching on the MPhil course. So that was great when he came in. Richard Ford, I mean, a similar kind of milieu, but maybe, a more sophisticated stylist. I love his short stories. His early short stories in particular are really great, and a sports writer I'm a big fan of. And there was another guy, Tobias Wolff, who was kind of the same generation, again, a short story writer, really good. After that, am I talking too much about my influence?
No, not at all. Go on.
Don DeLillo. I don't know. Do you know Don DeLillo?
No, I'm not familiar.
He's an American writer. He's been in his 70s now. He wrote a couple of wonderful books. Well, he's written a load of really good books, but two particularly wonderful books called The Names and White Noise.
Is he still going? Is he?
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'll look out for him, yeah.
Yeah, he's very funny, you know, and he's just brilliant on sort of postmodern America. He's and he's a kind of jazzy style. It's kind of little riffs and little... He listened an awful lot to Miles Davis, actually, and John Coltrane. He saw them play in the early 60s in New York.
Yeah, you were talking about, I think you just said, you mentioned a minute ago that you liked Graham Greene particularly because of the music and film, and you loved a good thriller, and you felt that that was your generation. And then the two pieces of music that we played in the first half of the show were your choices, Led Zeppelin and Miles Davis. Kind of disparate, I mean, both kind of iconic artists, but I mean, blues and jazz, and then rock and roll, heavy rock. I mean, do you see any...
Yeah, I think there is, actually.
Contrast in... Or tension between them? Any tension between rock and jazz? I mean, I don't want to get too far away from literature now.
Yeah. Well, I think with both of them, both Miles and all the players in Zeppelin, are just incredible musicians playing relatively simple music for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be for anybody else, but for them. And they just brought a great level of virtuosity to bear on simple tunes. And then they could expand it live. So they kind of brought me into jazz, really, because they had that level of sophistication in their playing. But also, they're just thrilling to listen to. I just find them amazing still.
And does it inform your own writing? I mean, what you just said there, I find extremely interesting. Playing simple stuff, but they're so sophisticated that it seems much greater. I mean, particularly if you apply that to someone like Raymond Carver, or maybe a more modern guy, someone like Cormac McCarthy, American again.
Yeah.
Very, very simple, paired back lines.
Yeah.
And it becomes something so much more when it gets onto the page.
Yeah, certainly that's the kind of writing I like.
Yeah.
You know, that you feel there's a lot of knowledge that is not being shown necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, and what you're getting is like something that's really refined.
Yeah.
And obviously you have to do the work as a reader, because you have to kind of work out what's going on under the surface. But at the same time, there's a speed to it. which I like. I don't like long sentences. And
generally speaking,
having said that, I'm reading Proust at the moment, working my way through Proust.
Never got there.
He's amazing. I mean, but you know, it's hard to see a book like that being written nowadays. I cannot imagine anybody having the time to write it or the piece. You know, it's so considered and slow in a good way.
But
I mean, it is slow reading.
Well, we are in a different era of writing. I mean, it's not the kind of landed gentry now who are very well educated and who I'll take the summer or something.
Yeah, or have long evenings with without Breaking Bad to watch or something, you know what I mean?
But in terms of time and space, you said you teach or you taught for a while.
Yeah.
Are you still teaching? Or?
No, I taught. I did HDIP then in UCD when I finished in UCD. And that was the early 80s when I finished, a long time ago. And there were no jobs around. So I managed to get a job abroad in Jamaica. So I taught at secondary level there for 2 years.
Wow. What was that like? Where in Jamaica were you?
Montego Bay, it's on the north coast. It was incredible. An amazing place. I mean, it had a huge influence on me.
Wow.
I mean, all the excitement in my life seemed to stop when I came back from Jamaica. I mean, it was 2 years of intense excitement. And then, you know, I came back and I started teaching in the school that I'd actually gone to from the age of 5.
Okay.
And I stayed.
Your old stomping ground.
My old stomping ground, yeah. I stayed there for about 22 years. And then I took a career break to write because I was finding writing increasingly difficult. I'd been writing as a teacher.
You've been writing the whole time, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I started writing in college, actually. I published a story when I was in college in New Irish Writing, and I published 6 or 7 more over the following years. But I found it really difficult because the longer I stayed in teaching, the more I found I had to put creative energy into it to make my classes interesting.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I did a tiny bit of teaching myself, but churning out the same lesson over and over again.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So it became more and more about teaching and less about writing. Anyway, one day this woman in the school told me she was job sharing. I thought, well, why haven't I thought about that? So I did that for a year.
Yeah.
And I wrote for that, and I couldn't job share the following year, but I managed to get a career break for a year. So eventually that led anyway to my leaving, because the school is a private school and they were running out of money and they offered voluntary redundancy. So having lived a very sensible life up to the age of 50, I decided, right, I've no kids. My wife and myself don't have any kids. So if things go wrong, we're going to suffer, but no children are going to suffer. So let's try this. So
brilliant. Well,
jumped. Yeah.
Quite a bit of courage as well. Yeah. You follow a long line of Irish writers who've gone from teacher to writer as well. Roddy Doyle, John McGahern.
I think they all had a bit of more success than I've had, though, before they went that route. But I just found it wasn't going to happen when I was teaching.
Okay.
I just found it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were saying you were writing in college. Was that the first time you'd been published?
Yeah.
Was it a
short story in New Irish Writing, yeah.
Okay.
It was the first short story I'd ever written. I mean, I was really lucky. I sent it off to this man, David Marcus, who was the big editor at the time. And New Irish Writing at the time is in the Irish Press. It's since defunct. But they published every week. So he had 52 opportunities in the year for a story to appear, you know, in a national newspaper with a big circulation.
How many stories did they publish?
52 a week, a year.
Oh, yeah. just 1 week?
1 a week. Yeah. But that's 52 opportunities.
Yeah, that's
pretty
true.
Good.
Not bad odds.
And they had established writers like McGarren, and then they had new writers as well. Anyway, I bunged it off, and within 4 days, he got back to me to say he was going to publish it. I just couldn't believe it.
Excellent.
You know? So he published some more stories, and I published, you know, with Kieran Carty when he took over as well. I wrote a novel set in Jamaica called Crazy Bald Heads, which is doing the round of publishers at the moment.
Crazy Bald Heads?
Yeah.
When did you finish the novel?
I finished it about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And my agent has been sending it around publishers. It's got very close a couple of times. It's a difficult one to sell because it's told from the point of view of an English guy. It's set in Jamaica. And we're pushing it, you know, in Ireland. So
okay.
It's kind of difficult one to see the market for. But, you know, it's it's definitely getting a good reaction, but just not quite enough. So maybe that might be my second book, I think, to get published. I think, anyway. I think it is a good book, but maybe it's just, as a first book, it's not...
What is your experience? So when did you actually take a break from teaching to fully focus on writing, to devote all your energies?
2008, I went to the Writers' Centre, and then 2010, I left the school. So since then, I've been, you know, full-time writer.
Okay, and what has your experience been of...
Surviving.
Publishing and... and
well...
What's your favourite... Actually, no, I won't say favourite, I'll say chosen form, because I know you've got some drama that I've read. You spoke about short stories and now a novel too, so I mean...
Yeah. Well, I'm going between fiction and drama. Okay. I mean, when I was at school, I was every year at the class I taught, I used to write a little play for them, and I kind of enjoyed that. So as a break from writing Crazy Bald Heads, I wrote a play and I just sent it off to one place and it won this award, got translated into German, eventually got done on the radio in the Philippines. Very strange. And that kind of, yeah.
Hang on, we'll have to go back to that.
Well, you might need another program for anyway, it ended up being serialized on the radio in the Philippines. Yeah, it's set in Jamaica again. So... You know, maybe for Irish audience, I don't know that it's going to be of particular interest because it's largely about Jamaica. There's hardly any Irish.
Do you return to Jamaica consistently as a kind of a source of inspiration? Or is it that time in your life in terms of your age, or is it actually the physical place of Jamaica?
That's a good question. I think it's both. You know, they say, you know, that you've generally, your experience, the really... vital experience happens to you before you're 21. You hear people saying that, and it could be true. Mind you, I was 22 when I went to Jamaica. I'd say 24, you know, when I came back. Certainly, that had a huge influence, because, I mean, you really see the other side of things.
Absolutely,
there,
yeah.
You know. And, yeah, I think it has had an influence. As to what's my favourite or my chosen form, I go between the two. I've had a couple of plays on the last 2 years, and I've another two on probably next year, it's looking like. And I really enjoy writing plays because it gets me out of my room, for starters, to meet people. Actors are amazing. I mean, I didn't know any actors before I started writing plays. And it's just incredible seeing what they do. I mean, as an art form, I'd always underrated it because the only experience I had of actors was actually either in a film or seeing them interviewed. And being interviewed, they often don't come across that well because they often can be quite shy and... You know, they're not comfortable unless they... No, I'm generalising here. But seeing them in actually doing their job is amazing, how they get into the character.
Yeah.
And then when you see them into the rehearsal room the third or fourth day, they walk into the room as the character. You suddenly start see this other being coming through.
And is it a creation, something from your mind, a figment of your imagination walk into a room?
Well, it's gratifying when it's the right one, which it has been, luckily. I mean, I've been very lucky to have had very good actors. I did have a weird experience with my first play, the one set in Jamaica that was done in Germany. The first time I heard my stuff read was in Germany. And, you know, it should have been like three out of the five were Afro-Caribbeans. These were all, you know, very definitely Teutonic Germans speaking German. You know, it didn't really work. I mean, they did their best with it, but it was kind of, you know, I didn't know what was happening. I couldn't follow my own work. So that was a bit odd. So yeah, it's wonderful experience writing a play, and you know, it's nerve-wracking because you don't have the same level of control, you know what I mean? As a fiction writer, the book stops with you, like Raymond Carver taking the full stop out. It's your decision all the time. But at a certain point with a play, you can feel it moving away from you.
You lose it. You lose something.
Yeah.
But,
and
I mean, in the losing, something is gained, surely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, if you get the right people. I mean, I've been lucky with that. I had a really good director with the first two plays, Lee Maligan, who's a writer's director. Well, he's other types of director too, but he's very, very good with writing, and he writes well himself too. He writes really nice emails. So he has a good feel for language, and he's also just a great sense of how to make something vivid. So
wonderful, yeah.
Yeah.
So what about, you sent me some stuff during the week. Just here on the show Writer's Block, we are talking to aspiring writers, so I like to try and read some of the stuff that they send me, and so I can talk to them about the stuff that are that is trying to be published. So tell us about your play Innocence.
Innocence, I got a bursary last year from Wicklow County Council Arts Office, and the idea was that I write a full-length play and that I get some dramaturgical help from a man called Brian Delaney. A dramaturg is... I didn't know what a dramaturg was before I got involved in theatre, but it's essentially an editor, somebody you can bounce ideas off. And this man is really good. He was working in the Abbey till recently. And so I actually ended up writing two plays, Innocence, which is, it's like an office comedy, but it's set in an office, in a brothel.
That's what the, I think it's the very first line of the script is, you know, office brothel, and there's this like immediate, this kind of wonderful contrast between kind of I don't want to be too judgmental, but something about a brothel is a kind of a reduction of humanity.
Yeah.
But then there's this kind of extremely urban business, this commodification.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really wonderful setting, straight off the mark, you know.
Thanks. Yeah, that was the idea of it. I suppose that's kind of one of my themes, is this kind of just complete commercialization of everything. Well, not everything.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Near FM wouldn't be. But, you know, there's so much now that it's just judged by market values. I mean, when you know, in the Ireland I grew up in, it wasn't like that. There wasn't so much money around, for starters.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were other values, not necessarily great ones, but, you know, I mean, because the church had a big influence too. But we seem to kind of thrown out the church and taken mammon instead, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, to an extent.
Don't they say globalism is the new imperialism?
Yeah, that's about it, isn't it? Yeah. So it's kind of about that. It's a story about a very powerful guy who's a guard.
I have to say, Mick, the guard character, is one of them. An extremely unpleasant figure. I found him. One of the most unpleasant I've come across in my reading.
Yeah, he's an anti-hero, all right.
Yeah.
And he wants a particular thing, which we won't talk about given the hour of the day, but he wants it and he's prepared to pay for it. And that puts the brothel owner, who's a woman, you know, in the position. Does she supply it or not? And she's an hour and a half to do so. The play all takes place over an hour and a half on this Friday evening in the brothel. And it's... She's, I think, a sympathetic enough woman in some ways.
A very, very interesting character, I found. I mean, she seems from a middle-class family, quite straight, if you like.
Yeah.
Good upbringing. I don't know if you know, there's a phenomenon, I mean, I'd kind of heard of it, this phenomenon of sugar daddies. And it struck a chord with me when I was reading this play. In a word, it's women from relatively good backgrounds who take money to prostitute themselves.
Right.
And prostitution, obviously, a very big problem in the world. But for women of a background who don't need to go to prostitution, that's what it seemed like.
I think she's
exploring that kind of territory, the temptations of money, I suppose.
I think, like, she's somebody who could have gone to college. I mean, that's originally why she got into prostitution.
Yeah,
but she claims that by the time she got to college, she was too old. The kids around her just irritated her. And anyway, she liked the money. And what I suppose you may have some certain sympathy for being a prostitute, but, you know, then she goes to the other side of the table. She becomes the madam. Now, admittedly, she seems to be a fairly, you know, she seems to run a fair house.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
I suppose the question is she going to deliver for this guy Mick, and what effect is it going to have on her and her family? Because her family are involved in this evening.
Yes.
So.
And there is a wonderful climax to the play. But that's not all you're writing at the moment. You're trying to get that staged?
Yeah.
Innocence.
Well.
Will it be? Where could we see it? Where will we keep an eye out for?
Well, that's still at an early stage. I mean, I have a director who I just to do a workshop with me. Mm-hmm. A very good director called Maisie Lee. And. We're going to do a workshop of that in the coming weeks. Then we'll just have to see where it goes from there.
Is it easier to get published in drama than a novel?
To get produced?
Produced, sorry. To get your work seen or read if you're a dramatist as opposed to a writer of novels?
I don't think so, really. I mean, there's a certain level that you can definitely get stuff out there, but there's a certain level you can definitely get stuff out in publishing. I mean, there's so much stuff on the web now. There's so much self-published. There's people setting themselves up as editors here, there, and everywhere. I think, to get good something, I'm not saying mine is, but I mean, to get something, that's ambitious, challenging out there is as hard.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
But like with a lot of these things, I think it comes down to luck. I mean, I've had an amazing run of luck with theatre. I mean, just keep meeting the right people and, show them something and they like
Very
it.
Very modest.
No, that's the way it's been.
And there is a journalist character in a sense, and I think there's a quote from her where she believes that it is possible to rid the world of prostitution within a decade.
Mm.
Is she an idealist?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think... I mean, she's very much in contrast to the other woman. I mean, I think she's supposed to be from the Irish Times, this woman.
Yeah.
I think they'd both be Irish Times readers, even the brothel owner would be. You know, I think she'd be like she'd be like your typical middle-class mum, except that she's working in a brothel.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's possible. I think that's very unlikely.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
You've a novel that you're working on at the moment as well. That's called Pretty Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It covers similar enough territory, but obviously much more expansive in the way that a novel can be. But I suppose. Well, tell us about it.
Well, it's
a work
begins.
In progress.
It's a work in progress. So I won't say too much about the story. But the first section, the section you saw, involves the trafficking of girls into Ireland from Belgium, and about the kind of gang behind it. And I'd been reading stuff about modern slavery. That's where I kind of got the idea from. So anyway, this is one it's a number of narratives that eventually combine. That's the first narrative.
Yeah. That's what I found very interesting, the separation of each section in the novel.
And they're kind of parallels. You start saying, "Oh right, this is a kind of an echo of the first." So whether I can get all the echoes in, I don't know, we'll see.
I absolutely hope you can. I'm just conscious of time here, Philip.
Okay.
I think we're all out of time for today. But I have to say, thanks very much for coming in. I wish I had more time to talk to you. It's been very, very illuminating and very interesting. And I'm looking forward to keeping an eye out for your work. And hopefully we'll get you back into the studio
sure.
as soon as possible.
Thanks, Morgan.